From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 19th day of March 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll hear a portion of yesterday's discussions between Chinese and American diplomats that took place in Anchorage, Alaska. It was an interesting exchange. And we'll wrap up our time together by discussing what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today at $5.57¾, up 11¼ on its settlement price. July 8½ higher at $5.38¾, and December 4.71½ for the new crop, 3½ cents higher. May beans gained 24 cents, settled at $14.16¼ a bushel. July at $14.03, up 22½, and November soybeans new crop at $12.20, up 13¾. Bean meal $9.70 higher, and the bean oil up 35 cents. For the day, it settled at $53.87. Wheat futures, July soft red down 2¾, $6.19¼ a bushel. The settlement price, and the hard red at $5.91¼, 1 cent lower on the afternoon. Live cattle futures, nearby April at $118.40, 17½ lower. Feeder cattle at $139.42½ for the April, down the $2 limit for the day. And lean hogs at $94.25, a nickel lower on the afternoon. Some of the energies, crude oil, $61.30 a barrel, up $1.30, and the price of gasoline on the RBOB just about unchanged at $1.94 per gallon. A quick look at the outside end markets. The Dow is now at 13,000, around 596, 167 points higher. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago. Hi, Michael. What a day it was. A whole lot better than yesterday. Surprised me, too, that it recovered so much. What happened?
Well, it was very necessary, Todd, because if you look at our two leaders, and we talked about this last Friday, we really needed a recovery in the meal and in the wheat. We did not get it in the wheat, and wheat is still very much on the radar going into next week as far as price action, because that soft red wheat minus corn has gotten down to 70 cents a bushel. So you are in a feed category on the board of trade. We'll have to watch the basis levels now as harvest approaches, because you're getting into the time period where new supplies in the northern hemisphere could really dent the feed demand. So I had several clients call me Friday and ask, can we make new highs in the corn? You know, after seeing almost 150 million bushels of Chinese purchases this week, I think we should be able to make new highs. I continue to feel as though a $12.25 to $12.50 new crop bean price should equate roughly to a $5 new crop corn price. But to be able to make new highs and get above that $5.74¼ high in the front end corn that we, you know, put in back in February, it's going to be tough without the support of wheat. So to answer your question, what happened was the meal came around. Why did the meal come around? I think it's because the bean oil and the meal spread started to reverse itself. Thursday was about crude oil almost solely, and the story about China wanting to ration meal and corn demand in their hog rations. I think Friday we woke up to the idea that they probably can't do much of that with the way they're compound feeding now. And plus, why would they need to ration if they didn't have much of a hog herd? So that kind of naturally answers the question that they are growing in their hog herd. USDA's ag attaché just came out Friday afternoon right before the close and supported the idea that, yeah, while they're in the hole going into the first part of 2021, they are digging their way out of their hole with their hog herd as well in terms of supply. So I'd say Thursday was about the macro. Friday was more about the micro, and wheat was really still stranded on kind of an island by itself.
There was a while where corn could be imported, and relatively recently, I think, still, into China, and they could make money on it because the price was so very high internally in China. Has that gap narrowed?
No, not hardly at all. We're still trading about $11 a bushel on the futures exchange in front end corn in China, and it's, you know, 550 here on the front end exchange. So certain parts of northeast China, it's even more expensive because of the transportation and getting it into that area, especially if you're going to try and do it from the south of China. So it's much, I think, more economical, and quality-wise, that's still an issue in China. Quality-wise, it makes a lot more sense trying to get it out of the Pacific Northwest if you need it into northeastern China.
It makes going into the end of the month with the grain stocks and the acreage figures the prospective plantings report do on the 31st fairly interesting, because demand really seems to be underneath this marketplace still.
Yeah, it does. And I think that this is where the producer probably has gotten some really good numbers to utilize now going into the end of the month report. If you look at the new crop wheat, new crop corn, and new crop beans, they all this week tested their long-term support levels and held very firmly. And so those support levels are kind of like the Custer line, as I call them, Todd. It's kind of the last stand on the uptrend, and to not go into a consolidation or a lower market. Those levels, those uptrending support lines need to hold, in my view. You also saw that in the meal market to get down to around $3.95 a ton. Last week, meal closed at $3.96.30 after getting even lower than that. This week, we're going to be able to shoot right back up above 407. That 407 level gets you real close to the weekly high of this week of 410. If you can take that out, then all of a sudden you're getting back into the February price levels of 417. And I think this is absolutely paramount. I think we've nailed it as far as what is the leader to the downside other than the wheat. And it really has been the meal because of African swine fever. So as you talked about a minute ago, before we went on the air, the first in, first out type mindset, the meal made the low first. Now it's trying to recover. This is really, really key after the acreage and stocks report, because if the bean stocks are as tight as we think they are, then you have pipeline supplies going all the way into summer. I still think there's an issue in Brazil for both corn and beans that the trade's going to have to price in. And if I'm correct about that, then South American pork prices should start to go up before the end of the month.
If that is the case, it'll make it very difficult to bring South American soybeans into the East Coast of the United States, which I think most in the trade were considering would happen.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's exactly right. And I think this is where you don't want to get too bulled up after this past week. And I say that with fresh news, with the Federal Reserve talking. I mean, the crude break in the market was Federal Reserve related, if you ask me, because they didn't show inflation. And all of a sudden, the inflation bulls ran. And I think the inflation bulls ran, and I think some of the La Nina bulls ran because of the weather. And the wheat really got caught up in that. So if you're looking for a drought in 2021 and you're looking for inflation, demand pull inflation in 2021, you're going to have to look elsewhere right now with what we've seen over the last week, week and a half. So it is still a sell and defend model year, if you ask me.
Anything else from the livestock side before I let you go?
Yeah, cattle on feed is going to be big because we just got weekly numbers on slaughter. Slaughter was very low compared to last week, and we lost another 4 pounds on the dressed weight. So we are very low on production. If we don't get a negative report from the cattle on feed report, I think fat cattle may be able to try and find some real longs in the cash market, and that supports this futures premium, which has been a real big deal.
Does that have an impact on the grain stocks going forward?
I think it could. I think this is where it goes back to, if livestock numbers are going down and the market wants them and the consumer is willing to pay a higher price, why wouldn't you see the corn and meal prices go up with the livestock?
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzlow from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. One news item for the day. Thursday, yesterday, U.S. and Chinese delegates met in Anchorage, Alaska. The meeting was the first high-level in-person talks between the Chinese and the Biden administration, as represented by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Each side publicly leveled rebukes as the meeting spiraled into a longer event than normally takes place, with the press present. Blinken started by stating he hoped to discuss President Biden's deep concerns with actions by China, including in Xinjiang, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and then going on to mention cyber attacks on the United States and economic coercion of U.S. allies, and saying each of the actions threatens the rules-based order that maintains the global stability. This did not set well, of course, with the Chinese diplomats who, at the table, issued a response.
Well, I think we thought too well of the United States. We thought that the U.S. side will follow the necessary diplomatic protocols. So for China, it was necessary that we make our position clear. So let me say here that in front of the Chinese side, the United States does not have the qualification to say that it wants to speak to China from a position of strength.
The Chinese diplomats went on to call out the United States, saying many people within the U.S. actually have little confidence in the democracy of the United States and that they have various views regarding the government of the United States. Mostly what's been quoted was the early scripted part of the meeting. It deteriorated. You may find the full transcript on our website at willag.org. On this Friday, let's take a look at the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass. He's here now from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agribulb. Hey, thanks, Eric, for taking the time with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, let's begin with the weather that's today. It's beautiful. It's nice. Way better than the last couple of days when it has just been a real slog. A lot of rain around the Midwest, I suppose.
Yeah, and not just here, too. Back in the plains as well. We actually saw on the latest drought monitor a one, and in some places up to a two-class improvement in parts of the Central Plains. And for everybody listening to this in Illinois, we want that. We need that drought to get beat back to the west as fast as we can. But yeah, it's been extremely wet here over the last couple of days, and gosh, the winds. I had just finished burning off everything from the ice storm on January 1st. And by the way, at the bottom of my pile, I still had ice from that event there. And all of a sudden, I got to clean the yard up again because we had gusts over 60 miles an hour here. So it's nice to see the sunshine this weekend and start to get those temperatures to warm back up and really kind of get some reprieve from what last week gave us.
Reprieve, will we keep it around for very long?
Well, that's the unfortunate part about it being spring, right? The Pacific jet stream has got a lot of momentum in it. And what that means is that its ability to send these little shortwaves over the Rocky Mountains, which then kind of expand once they get over the plains and give us these big low pressure systems, I think that's going to continue. So while we got a few days of little bit of peace and quiet here, we will have a system coming through early next week, and then there's another one kind of hot on its tails. And unfortunately for the South, which got beat on pretty hard by the severe weather this past week, they're going to continue to see, you know, open Gulf of Mexico moisture transport. It'll destabilize, and they're going to see quite a bit of thunderstorm activity. Farther north where we are, it'll still come in as rain. But, you know, bringing in rain at the end of March and beginning of April to really revive the profile, you know, as much as we don't, you know, we want to get out there in spring weather, it'll be good for us later on in the season.
We're in the last third of the month of March now. I'm wondering what April might look like.
Yeah, got brand new data this morning on Friday here. And as we look out there, we've now had the last several runs from the European model. They do a thing called, they make what's called a weekly forecast, goes out 46 days. They continue to buy into the warmer pattern for April. And I've got no evidence to overturn it. So when I look at it and see the milder pattern, it doesn't mean we won't get, you know, shots at cooler air. I mean, it's still April and we'll still, you know, have our typical last frost date, you know, sometime mid-April. But it appears to be mild. So what we'll be doing is dodging rain rather than dealing with cold temperatures, I think, as we get into that month. So I would just be, like you said, we'll be prepared for when the window does open, and it'll open, right? I mean, we always get a window that we get out there and get things in and quickly, you know, as soon as those insurance dates open up and allow us to do that. So I have to say that if you saw the forecast graphics for April right now, things look pretty favorable for us for an early go.
So you're thinking warm and wet as opposed to warm and dry. And I guess I'm thinking about beating that drought back to the west and whether those things all happen or not.
Yeah. And as we look out towards summer, there are still just a few things that kind of hang in the balance that still have me just a bit on edge, just worried a little bit about drought in the Midwest. And until I start to see some changes in the ocean temperatures in the Pacific, I think I will continue to be concerned about that, just because some of the long-range models, unlike last year with the heat backed west pretty quickly, they're not really doing that just yet. So there's still a lot up in the air that could possibly happen to impact our summer growing season just in the next couple of months here.
Any news to report on the South American La Nina?
Well, interestingly enough, the La Nina, according to a few different metrics we use to measure it, is technically gone. So it's in neutral phase right now. What I really like to look at is something called the Southern Oscillation Index, which tells me what those trade winds are doing. And it's down below the La Nina threshold. Now, what's interesting is, because it is fading, we've now allowed for a slowing of the Brazilian monsoon. Now, the monsoon typically goes into the month of April, which is what makes the safrinha crop usually a big crop. But with the slowing of those winds moving in there in the monsoon, we're now starting to get some indications that we're going to have some trouble in Brazil with the safrinha crop getting enough moisture. So they had a super wet harvest for the first crop of beans. Now they mudded in some of the corn. And the issue is going to be here, is it going to get the moisture in the end of March through April and into May to finish? And I think there's some pretty big question marks there, given what I've lately seen with the influence of this La Nina.
All right. Hey, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.